Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I have a very special guest for you today, and that is Catherine Blakelock, who is the founder of the Brexit Party. And I should, of course, for those of you that are watching, you may well be aware of all of the shenanigans that have occurred in the Brexit Party's successor Reform with regard to the conflict between its leader, Nigel Farage, and Rupert Lowe, and his removal, and his the various accusations they're levelling against him, the investigation into him, and all of this stuff that we all know about. Well, Catherine Blakelock knew Nigel Farage rather well, so we're going to investigate further into what might be going on in the Reform Party, in a way. So, Catherine, hello.
Hello, good morning.
So how did you come about setting up the Brexit Party?
Okay, so we still hadn't had Brexit, and there was all sorts of disruption going on in UKIP. There was an existential fight between Gerard and some of the other parts of the party and Nigel. And Gerard Batten and Nigel Farage disliked each other intensely. And Gerard wanted to bring in Tommy Robinson and was focusing very much on Islam. And Nigel obviously didn't like that. And during an earlier period, before there'd been a special meeting, Henry Bolton, do you remember him?
The leader of one
yes,
time.
Yes, well, Nigel met him on a train. He was a former Liberal Democrat, and he had been brought in specifically to beat Anne-Marie Waters, which he did, and he was hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. And so there was during that period, I spent a lot of time talking to various people, including Richard Brain, about setting another party up. And then there was a special meeting and Gerard Batten became leader. And then we carried on with this fight going on. And I started buying companies, names. So effectively, I bought names like Our Country, Our People, Our Country, the Brexit Party, Alternative for Britain, various names. Just at that time, you could buy names on Companies House very easily. And so I had these names, and then things started to get worse with Brexit, and it became, and there was a special meet. I think the NEC voted to keep Gerard, which meant Nigel didn't have a platform. And I was speaking to Nigel, and I said, well, I've got this name. What do you think about this name? And he liked the name. And so I said, right, well, I will proceed to start this party up, put it through the Electoral Commission.
So Nigel became leader in 2006 of UKIP, and then resigned and then became leader in about 2009, and then became went back to being leader in 2010, and then resigned in 2016, September, yeah, and then went back to being leader in October 2016. For a month, so there's all of this resigning and then becoming leader again, and then it's rather peculiar. Why did he keep doing that, do you think?
Well, there's very serious why he kept doing that. I mean, you could take the magnanimous view that he got tired, he'd been doing it for a long time, he wanted to earn some money, or you could take the conspiracy view, if you want to call it that, that he always resigned at a point when they were about to win.
I see. And why would he do that?
Well, as Godfrey Bloom, who you had on last week, tweeted something to the effect of, once is a coincidence, twice is, and I'm not exactly getting the words, but you know, twice is unlucky, and three times smells of something else. So effectively, Godfrey Bloom and various other people were saying that he was controlled opposition in some way. Now, if he is controlled opposition, then obviously the restructuring of the party, now that he's nearer power, to remove anybody who's patriotic and to bring in Zia Youssef, and to effectively make it the new Conservative Party, would sort of confirm that. But there's no evidence of this, but people in UKIP talked about it many times, about bizarre things happening, about decisions that made no sense, including a chairman who was there for a very long time. So, you know, it's really unclear, and I have no evidence. I'm only just saying what Godfrey Bloom has said, but the events prior to Rupert Lowe at the moment are quite extraordinary.
It is. Let's go on to that in a minute, but I'm just looking at the list. So they do really well in the 2009 UKIP MEP elections, parliamentary elections for the European Parliament, and he resigns.
Yeah.
At the point, they've done really well. He then comes back in again as leader. He then comes back in again as leader, and then they win the referendum, so they're on a high.
Yes.
So he resigns.
Yeah. I mean,
You are now. I see it. You are exactly right. Whenever the party is doing well, and part of them doing well could be argued to be his charisma or whatever, it's almost as if it's doing too well. So better resign and put someone less tenogenic in charge of the party. It's quite extraordinary. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, the other question to ask, and I asked it in an article with Lotus Eaters, is why was Nigel doing UKIP for 20 years and was so unsuccessful, effectively? I mean, during this 20 years, we had the greatest demographic change that the country has ever seen. We had massive increases in crime, etc. And we had a Conservative Party who was pretty useless, and yet Farage, apart from taking MPs who walked across, like Douglas Carswell, never got an MP elected anywhere. And that isn't a very good record. And even if you look at, for example, the results of the reform election, I mean, he hasn't increased the number of votes very significantly. He's increased the concentration, i.e. he managed to win 5 seats, but the total number is not up enormously.
What were some of the bizarre decisions then that UKIP members commented upon that they thought were strange?
Well, there was this constant problem that nothing ever got done properly, that there was never any support when required, that funds were not reaching branches, that branches weren't answered to, similar things that are going on again. There was obviously Nigel leaving at important times, and then there was Nigel having massive disputes with people. And somebody did recently it's come up with a number of 50 people. And I mean, these 50 people are the best people. These are not.
Carry on.
Not sort of just some unknown person standing in some seat. There would be some of them as well. But I'm talking about people who really could have led the country, who could have been ministers, who could have been great MPs, from Kilroy Silk to Godfrey Bloom, to Douglas Carswell, to Suzanne Evans, Stephen Wolfe, to myself, and so on. The list is absolutely endless. And if you look at what happened in the European elections, when they did very well, they would start with 15 MEPs. And by the end of the term, there would be, on average, about 5 left under the whip. The other 10 would have either been fired or, like Godfrey, would have just given up and left because they were so fed up with how things were going. There were also so many financial irregularities and shenanigans in the European Union, in the European Parliament, that a number of MEPs left because they were concerned about their financial safety and what was being done, for example, on their behalf. So, you know, looking at this history, it's, he falls out with everybody. I mean, look at what happened with Douglas Carswell and the short money. I mean, Douglas Carswell is an extraordinary honourable person, a very good MP. He's your only MP. I mean, surely if you were, for example, you know, Sony Music, and you've got one superstar who is bringing you the money in, you would foster the best agreement and the best relationship you could with that person.
So what kind of issue? So basically, yeah, he says, I don't fall out with people, they fall out with me.
Yeah.
He said that. But he seems to be the common denominator. A lot of people fall out with him. So what is it? What are they? Is it paranoia on his part? Does he treat them badly? Does he talk to them rudely? I mean, what is it that leads to these fallouts, which seem to
I can't comment really specifically on other people. But I know, for example, that some of the people, there were a number of people who got fined very heavily in the European Parliament, some of them personally. I think at one point, Paul Nuttall was very concerned about his position. And there were a number of others who actually got fines of significant tens of thousands of pounds for the actions of UKIP that they ended up with the bill for. So that's one thing. And the next thing is this, the exclusionary factor, which is a very, very common denominator, which we can hear with Rupert Lowe that this has been going on for 3 or 4 months. We heard it when you interviewed Godfrey Bloom, that he would just ignore things. He would pick up his phone when you were trying to do stuff. He wouldn't have meetings with you. So this was another cold shouldering, a way to control people or to make them so uncomfortable that they finally give up.
Okay, so tell me then about, so you founded the Brexit Party, you get involved with Farage. Tell me about how this panned out, apropos what we're finding out about his character.
Well, it didn't pan out very well for me, did it? I had the exclusionary tactics used on me and the wearing down tactics. And I am going to be making some statements on Tuesday, so I can't comment exactly, because there are a lot of documents and pieces of paper and information that have not been released yet, that I have never released. And the reason I didn't release these things or go to the press at the time was Brexit hadn't been done. And I'm a real patriot and I was always loyal to Nigel. I mean, it was not my intention to be difficult or unpleasant.
Can we go through historically? I first met you in 2019 at the Traditional Britain Group. And
yes.
You, as I recall, you just set up the Brexit Party or something like that. It was new.
No, after I'd left. It was certainly after I'd left. After I had been, inverted commas, fired by Nigel.
Oh, no, that's right. That's right. That, I think I might, yes, I'm remembering incorrectly. Was it when they first announced you were speaking, you were in charge of it, and then by the time you were speaking, no. You weren't.
No,
it might be something like that.
Nigel would never have approved of the Traditional Britain Group. That's like me going to a platform with Tommy Robinson. That would not have been an approved for place to be seen. I know when Rees-Mogg and I believe even maybe Margaret Thatcher, but certainly Rees-Mogg spoke at the Traditional Britain Group, it was an acceptable organisation. But Nigel continually he wanted nothing to do with Tommy Robinson. He wanted nothing to do with Anne-Marie Waters. He wanted nothing to do with Paul Weston and multiple other organisations. And so the Traditional Britain Group would not have been on the list. I need to just get my plug for 1 second. Apologies for this.
Okay, I must misremember. It must be that you were the former. Okay, it was already done. So what were the kind of issues then over which you managed to fall out with
Fraud? I didn't fall out with him. I have not fallen out. And I was actually promised to stand in the Great Yarmouth constituency, that was reneged on. So I never fell out with Nigel. I fell on my sword for the point of Brexit. According to Nigel, I needed to do it. According to Robin Tilbrook of the English Democrats, his view, it wouldn't have made a foggiest bit of difference either way, whether I'd stood as an MEP or not. Or a parliamentary candidate. But basically, what happened during the period was the Guardian produced a first article. This was the first problem I had. My husband is black. My current husband is a Jamaican, and I have two half Nepalese children. So we live in a multiracial family, but we don't live in a multicultural family. And the Guardian had dragged up. Now, the question is, how did they get this document? I had written an unpublished, I'd written something about testosterone in black men. And because I'm quite aware of sort of what Jamaicans are like, and how, you know, the argument was that they have very, very high levels of testosterone during their late teens, 20s. And then by the, and this is proven biologically, and then by the age of 40, they have the same level of testosterone as white men. And they, and you can see it in what they do. They all sort of become, they all settle down and become, I make a joke, but they become washing machine repairmen after having been completely crazed in their, you know, having lots of babies and etc. And so I wrote this article, and it had been on, like, I had a web page at one point, but It was nowhere published apart from on this, and so somebody had picked it up. Now there's some evidence now. Well, there's plenty of evidence, I think. Gawain Towler, after he left, was fired by Reform, said that the Brexit Party, and I don't know whether UKIP were doing this as well, but I don't think they would be, certainly not under Gerard Button, were handing files to Hope Not Hate. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't heard about that.
When I can't find enough base knowledge to feed the inner workings of my mind, and I go onto Audible, and all I can find is warmed-up diarrhea by people like Adam Rutherford and Angela Saini, I sometimes don't know what to do. But that's why I use Legion.com. Legion.com gets the most based books, summarizes them into key salient points, and reads them to you in 25 enthralling minutes. Whether it's my own books or whether it's Who We Are and How We Got Here by David Reich, a fascinating book which allows us to understand in much more depth the evolution of man using archaeogenetics, taking old skeletons, analysing the different alleles, and telling you exactly how we evolved. Whatever based book it is, Legion.com is the one for me.
Well, we knew some time ago that and Hope Not Hate had published this, that they were doing the Reform Party and Brexit Party's vetting.
Right.
And we had the most left-wing Marxist organisation who hates any patriotic party doing the vetting. This was, I believe, issued by Richard Tice. And then Gawain Towler recently said that that this stuff had been going on for some considerable time. I cannot prove, and you mustn't say that they leaked those documents about me, but it's always your own party who has the is the most dangerous, and your own side. There was a case where I went, right at the beginning, I went to Nigel Farage's lawyer. He has a lawyer behind the scenes. I won't name him, it doesn't matter. But, and we were having a chat, and we were talking about various people, and he said, I have a file on them. I have a file on everyone. This was before the party had even been set up. And I said, oh, so do you have a file on me? And he just laughed.
So an anti-English hate group is being used by an anti-freedom, anti-democratic hate group is being used by the Brexit Party to vet its own members, and they have contacts in some.
Certainly, I don't have the timeline, I don't have the dates, but if you look, go back to the statement Way Towler made about it, and I believe Richard Tice had made a statement to that effect. The Gawain Towler one's much more recent. But yes, that this was what's happened.
So I don't particularly like conspiracy theories, and I think that one of the problems on the right is that people are too prone to them. But with regard to your conspiracy earlier of Farage being controlled opposition, we have an organisation, I don't know whether you know, that I was subject to an undercover reporter, Hope Not Hate reporter, a while ago. And it turned out that this person was the grandson of somebody who was very high up in MI5. This person had managed to procure a fake passport, which is illegal and which you could only realistically do if you are involved in the Secret Services. So it seems to be obvious that Hope Not Hate are involved in the Secret Services in our country on that basis. And if we're saying that Nigel Farage always seems to resign at the one moment he shouldn't in order to mess up his party and is in contact with a group that is effectively MI5, it does rather make one think there's something deeper behind the scenes, and actually he literally is controlled opposition.
Okay, can I just tell you another incident? Again, I don't know anything about phones. But I had a friend in Liverpool who was pretty down and out. He was actually an Oxford graduate, but he just was quite down and out. And he had a 2G phone. This was during the period when I was involved with Nigel, talking to Nigel a lot. And he said to me, and I happened only this one occasion to be in Liverpool, and he said to me, after you spoke to Nigel, and every single text message that I had on my phone to you disappeared, one at a time. Ping, 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 ping. They were taken up. Now, I don't think you could do that on a 3G or 4G phone, and I don't know enough about it, but this is the sort of person who is not lying, and the coincidence was just too amazing. And I imagine it's possible that if you're data harvesting on a 2G phone, you can't hide it, whereas you can on other phones. Again, tech people may say it was rubbish. I think I did try to ask a few people about it, but it was just one of those things. It's like, well, that's very weird, isn't it? Second after I put the phone down to Nigel's.
That's extraordinary. Tell me more then about your defence. So you're going back to the Guardian article. What year was this?
Well, this was all happening between the end of 2018 and 2019, because I resigned at the end of April 2019.
Okay. And so what happened then? What happened once this
information... Well, an article was produced. This, in my opinion, was the first weakening of me. This was the first shot. This was the first break me down. Because I would look at it like a systematic process of breaking.
Mm-hmm. So what was the second shot?
This article said... Nigel's mate, Catherine Blakelaw, says testosterone causes violence in black men.
Okay.
So it was a very defamatory article. It didn't mention the fine husband's flag. It just managed to lose their mind. It is the article that still to this day is deduced by people like Femi to say that Nigel's a racist because I'm a racist.
Okay, and what was
the article about black people? I think that was the first point where I was told that you've got this problem, you've got this PR problem, you know, you better tone down, get behind the scenes a bit more, yeah.
So you had this article in The Guardian, this thing happened to your friend. What happened next?
There were things happening that I didn't like. There were social things happening where I was being deliberately excluded. And there were also administrative and Companies House things that were being done in a really... I'm going to use to try and find the word I want. It was more than what odd. it was probably illegal, where they were shoving documents in front of me in bars and things. For example, one evening I went and spoke at the Bow Group. And after the event, Phil Basey, who had been appointed as treasurer at that point, or maybe secretary at the bottom, a secretary, and I'd appointed him, came along with some documents and shoved them in front of me and said, sign here to make Nigel a director. There's no minutes. And there were a lot of events like that. There were lots of meetings it was chaotic. It was impossible to have any organization. I was getting excluded out of things, and I was becoming very unhappy about what was happening. I mean, you have to realize as well at this point that I am the sole shareholder. They need my signature for everything. And it carried on like this. Then I had formed a trust document, so I had given 50% of my shares. And this story is, I'm going to talk about later this week, but I had specifically wanted to make this company a not-for-profit. I bought it as a for share because that's the quickest and easiest way to buy a company. But I realized very early on that I needed to make it into a company limited by guarantee. Do you understand the difference?
Vaguely.
Right. Well, the new company that they have just set up, Reform 2025, is a company limited by guarantee, meaning that there are no shares, no shareholders, and it's a not-for-profit. This is the result of all the fighting, all the bad publicity about it being a for-profit, Reform and the Brexit Party. But my aim was, and I took advice on this, including from Nigel's lawyer, my aim was to make it a not-for-profit. And that's what a political party should be. It shouldn't be out there to make money. It should be, this one is being given. And so there were two pieces of advice. I mean, there were two different advice. One was that I could have bought another company and just swapped the numbers over. And this would have been normal, simple thing, so that you've got the new articles and the new company. But it was suggested by one of Nigel's lawyers that I shouldn't do that, that I should put a trust document in place. And he drafted it, and then it went to my solicitors. And I gave 50% of my shares to this trust. Subsequently, after the pressure had been put on me, let's get into the timeline slightly better. Things were heating up. So I had already agreed that I would pass the leadership over to Nigel. That we never had an agreement. There was no written agreement. There was an understanding that I would set this up and Nigel would become leader. That was never in question. But what was in question was I didn't do all this work and not get paid and spend hours of my life, 6 months, 24/7 doing this, to be dumped in a ditch in Norfolk and never spoken of again, and have my name dragged through the mud as an appalling person. The understanding was, as far as I was concerned, that I would become an MEP, that I would be on the MEP list, and then maybe I would become an MP later if that opportunity, but we were never talking really about MPs because we were talking about MEPs at that time. And there wasn't really much discussion at those early stages about what was going to happen with the shares, what's happening with the company. Anyway, the next expose came out about me, which was, this is the point at which they demanded that I hand over things to Nigel. So the next expose came out with me in The Guardian again, saying that I had made a series of Islamophobic tweets. And this has lived with me forever. I mean, my introduction, I was going to be on talk radio, although I was in Vietnam and didn't have a good connection. But they were going to introduce me as the founder of a Brexit party who got fired for anti-Islamic tweets. Everything else I've done in my life is irrelevant, yeah? And in fact, now I will just defend it. I just said, no, I'm not going to be introduced like that. It's absolutely outrageous. I mean, what I said was true or an opinion. And I'm allowed to have that opinion. I mean, if I say that I think Islam is incompatible with Western democracy, well, there are many people, including Douglas Murray, who would agree with that. If I say that Mornington Crescent looks like Turkey, I think I have a point. I wrote another tweet, which was, I want my country back. I want a country of little churches and seaside donkeys on the beach, not knife crimes and drug deals and burkas. And so many people...
When one is involved with this area of politics with just these bloody cowardly people... I met one when I was at a conference recently who tried, and Nigel seems to be like this, who are all about getting the exact balance right, where on the one hand they want to, I call it bravery signalling, they want to eke out a niche where they are this brave warrior who is prepared to say the truth and all this and try to rescue Britain from the chaos that the Blair regime has brought to it, and previous regime, particularly Blair. On the other hand, they also are so desperate for power that it's, oh, well, we can't say that. Oh, we can't be interviewed by that person. Oh, I can't talk to that person. Oh, I can't. And it's quite terrible. It's just so sneaky and oliginous.
So they had very clever, and I mean, I haven't actually thought about it until this point. Because if you were going to set something up, you would set it up like that, wouldn't you? This person's going to be difficult to be called a racist because they've got three racial groups in their family, both Asian and Black. So it's going to be a bit difficult to call them a racist. So how do you do it? Well, you find this article. So article number one in The Guardian sets the scene that I'm a racist without giving anybody any background about me. And number two puts the knife in, does the killer shot, because Islamophobia is worse than racism.
No, I'm not sure. I think racism is worse than that. But I think that's what they do, though. That's why that was one of the things that UKIP did. Whereas the British National Party would talk about race, they wouldn't. But they would talk about Islam because it's slightly less toxic for left-wing people to discuss religion than to discuss race, I think. Because you can't change race.
Yeah, you may be right. But I actually see that in terms of fear... And in terms of real problems in this country, the issue of Islam is far surpassing any of the other issues. But anyway, we're getting sort of into it. But the point is, there was a 1-2. The second one is, right now, you are totally toxic. You need to resign. And Nigel will take over. I was actually invited on Newsnight that night, and I was told I couldn't go on it. So... And I was given all this stuff about, you know, that we need to get Brexit done and you're toxic and, you know, this is bad for everything and we need to win here and you need to go behind the scenes. And as I said, my intentions for all those years, and I'd given a lot of money to it as well in UKIP, personally, I gave money to Gerard Batten, I gave money to UKIP, I gave money to other constituencies, was... for the sake of my country. I mean, I was really, and I still to this day think our country has been destroyed, and I was prepared to do work, any effort for any thing that would help it. And Nigel was that, and I wasn't going to harm him. And so I stepped back, and then we started, of course, of the shares, because I'm now still in control of the bank accounts. I'm still in control.
Are you ready for the future of the West?